You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick, broadcasting to you from Bunker Bay in beautiful Western Australia. Look it up. I'm on vacation with my family, and for that reason, we have decided to do a kind of best of. If you were of a generation where there were sitcoms, this would be the clip episode. So we're just taking Patreon bits that we think are worthwhile or fun, or will just keep you entertained while you are probably entering your own vacations of whatever type. And I guess in some ways it's a sampler plate for you to check out our wares, but really it's kind of just, hey, thought you'd enjoy this. Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah or Blessed Kwanzaa or, you know, I assume, to be honest, that most of our listenership don't practice shit, but you probably eat food with family during this time. And if you don't, I've spent holidays with just a dog, that is also a blessing. Listen to the fucking episode. Have a good time. I hope you're all in good health. Holidays, whatever.
Yo, let's tell this story. Many times, I'll use a specific example. CBGB's was closing. They were doing benefit shows, even though the benefit shows were like kind of a farce, right?
Yeah, like too little, too late, or like Hilly didn't really. Hilly, they owed $90,000. Those shows over the course of 2 weeks could have paid off the $90,000, no problem.
Yeah. Yo, Adult World.
Yeah.
Adult World, like, look. If somebody wants to throw me $90,000 right now, I will lick the concrete beneath your feet. But $90,000 to save CBGBs, you know, like I think if this happened now, someone would just some invested like person would be like, wait, you just need $90,000? Cool, here you go, boom.
Patty Bitcoin would have slid right in. Patty Bitcoin and be like, I got this.
And maybe at that time, Patty Bitcoin is down about 12 grand.
Wow, through the roof. Maybe we should do this for you then.
Yeah, the CB's magnets. So Gorilla Biscuits, however, did play a reunion. That was their first reunion show, I think, period. Yep.
They did one for Rabies in 97.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's a classic.
I mean, it was two, three songs or whatever the fuck.
That's right.
This is the first full reunion.
That's right. So they did a full reunion set, and it's really cool. I actually have speaking of autographs, I have a copy of Start Today with all the members' autographs on the cover from that. Shout out to Larry Ransom. He got a few of those at that CB show. I didn't go out for it, and I was kind of like, I should have gone. But I was living in California. It's okay.
It was incredible.
Yeah, truly a cool show. But that's one of those things. It kickstarted the emotions. Not unlike when Patrick did that end of year reunion in Albany and people went nuts. LOL. And it was like, oh, damn. Gotta do this again. You know, playing songs no one's ever heard. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, typical end of year shit. Do you know that, Tom, that they didn't, like, if you didn't see them within 6 months of a record, you just never see those songs?
I've learned that because I remember being like, oh, so you guys don't play anything from that Rev record, huh?
Yeah, or any, yeah, it's,
you know, I mean, it's, just seeing them afterwards, because I remember I loved that Rev record. And I was like,
lots of people did. And it was like one of those things, like, it was like a test your will, like, how quick are you to get into something? Oh, not quick enough. Oh, you missed it. Duh.
And you had so many releases that I was like, oh, this must be on like the Jamaican 7-inch or whatever the fuck that I didn't have. So I was like, ah. Meanwhile, it was probably like, you pulled Ryan out. Anyway.
Our poking of Patrick can conclude with that. But so GB then shortly thereafter, I mean, that was 2005, right, Tom? The CB's thing? They do the reunion tour in 2006, and it was kind of one of those things where you understood it right away. Like, oh, these guys did this, had a fantastic time. Okay, cool. You know,
right. Saw the reaction.
So I don't know the backstory, but I think the Bane folks did that show. and realized that it was something that was important to them and that obviously was important to a lot of other people and a lot of people out there. And that reciprocity, that feels something, right? I'm not wrong about that.
I mean,
like knowing a thing you did was important to people.
Yeah,
as it is important to yourself.
Why are you asking? You're like,
wow. Well, no, I'm asking both of you because
I mean,
you,
the Tom, I think the world that is like, oh, you like that record? You'll never hear it again. Now, like, that's Pat.
Yeah, I honestly, people might think that this is bullshit, but the only reason that Drug Church is accessible is because the guys have made it clear that that's what they want, and
yeah.
I see myself as like the guy that
conduit.
I just see myself as a guy that joined a band. I don't see Drug Church as like.
You're not like the ringleader of this
band. Yeah,
that's not your band.
Yeah, it's not my band. So,
I mean, you definitely treat it like your band.
No, see, this is Patrick in the Drug Church relationship. The other guys are like, look, you just need to wear a butt plug while we play. We don't care if you're into it, but you like the song. So he's like, fine, fuck, I'll do it. That's what it is.
So Pat, so the Drug Church backstory, we'll get back to.
Yeah.
We like this freewheeling.
Was that a band that they had put together and they were like, you know, we should get the guy from End of a Year, Self-Defense Family, to sing for us. Like, how did this get, can you give us like
a two minute,
how did it start?
So they were in a band that sounded like the Get Up Kids. And
what band was it?
I think it was called California. Terrible.
And, then,
I
don't know. And they were
all Albany based?
All Albany guys. And then they
posted something at Guitar Center on Wolf Road.
I mean, dude, it was at the Co-op, duh.
There was a Craigslist ad that said, need a singer that sounds like the guy from the Cult. No, so they, Classic Guitar Center is like the Cult, Nine Inch Nails, Aerosmith, like bands that have nothing to do with each other.
Right. I love that.
I want to go post that today as like a prank, see how many responses I get.
There's got to be somebody that worked at Guitar Center that was self-aware that like saved all of those, you know? It's got to be. But anyway, they went into the basement to write some new songs, and the songs didn't sound like their music. It sounded like Seaweed. And they were like, oh, yeah, we should just do this as a different band. And they were like, can we find somebody that's 10 years older than us and on death's door? And they said, oh, yeah, let's get that local guy that never reached any success. And then they and then they called me.
They went to Rob first and then got you. Got it. Right.
Well,
here's a question for you. Pure benevolence. The dudes in Drug Church are like, yo, I think it'd be cool for you to duet with Rob on a song. Would you do it?
In principle, yeah. Look, it's hard for me to like I don't have an actual problem with Rob. It's just Rob.
No, he thought you were saying something lame about him. He got mad about it and it was like, oh,
yeah.
Better than me?
But the one thing I will say about Rob is that in his personal interactions, he's he's funny and he's like he's in on the bit
a lot.
He's a lot, but on stage,
is he in on the bit?
But on stage, he's self-serious in a way that would not flatter Drug Church. Do you know what I mean? For example, I fucking love Blacklisted and I think George is exceptional. I would cover a Blacklisted song, but couldn't sing with George because George is like, he has a completely different approach to what he's doing on stage versus what Drug Church is doing on stage. You know what I mean? Like there's dudes that are just like very self-serious guys on stage.
You think Rob wouldn't be able to be playful on stage?
That's what I'm saying. Like lyrically, I mean, you could say that.
He wouldn't be able to sing on your Poop Panda LP that's due out this year.
Exactly. Like George is a good example. George has some like really like clever and self-aware lines, but it never deviates from self-serious. You know what I mean? Like it's like very
right. They're never funny.
Right. Yeah. And like so, it's just a different process. So
really quick. You just identified one of the things, like maybe something that someone would identify as being like not a problem or a fault, but like, oh, you know, that's, you know, maybe it's too, but like maybe because I'm too self-serious at points, that's also why I love Blacklisted so much. You know, like I could probably take some error. I mean, I, you know, you guys both know me enough. I can be silly and goofy, but like, I also am like, what do you mean? It's not funny. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's not really, it's very serious.
Yeah.
So I love it. So
I think that that's like a, there's this interesting line, right? Like Slumlords. Slumlords is for some people just a little too unserious.
Like just right, because we're not saying we're not like there is the medium between. Like you don't need to have fart songs, but also you can be. It can feel rigid, I guess.
Yeah, let's put on the line of those Slumlords on one end and Starkweather on the other. And it's like, yo, I don't think there's much cross. Like those acts might respect each other, but I don't know how they collab. You know what I mean?
True. So you're saying in this situation, One King Down is Starkweather and Drug Church is Slumlords.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, that's cool. Maybe it's Jeff Perlin's your duet mate. We'll see. So how do we get to hear? Oh, the Drug Church origin story, right? Was the first Drug Church practice cool, awkward, fun, none of the above?
In my memory, it was in this might not be correct, but in my memory, it was in Chris's basement, and his mom has like five small dogs, and they like barked the entire time, and one of them had like. One of them's head never fully formed, so it had like a gap, like the way babies do. You know what I mean? Like
Yes.
So babies got that thing on the top of their head that's soft, and one of these dogs had a soft top of its head because there was something wrong with it. And I just remember wanting to touch it to see if its brain would respond, but I didn't.
Tom, do you have that same impulse? No, we're waiting for him to come back.
Oh, we lost Tom.
It's okay. We were supposed to try the other thing.
Yeah,
I sent that along. You guys got it? No, for the background, everybody, Tom will be back in 1 second. We use one website to record our podcast. Tom's here. And for some reason, no matter what he does, Tom and this system have an adversarial relationship.
It sucks.
It sucks. So we were supposed to do the other one. I'm sorry I didn't remember to remind, but I sent in the link. We'll do it for next recording. See how it goes. Right. Tom, we were just talking about soft spots where a skull hadn't fully formed on a dog's head. Have you ever had the impulse to touch that?
No.
Okay.
I wanted to see if I guess
you and Pat are on two different things.
Yeah, if I touch that space and it starts like the dog starts playing the violin or something. But
hello, Patrick.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, yeah, oh, that's the on and off switch.
let's get to the point, though. What's relevant to our
are you guys on drugs?
Which is a band that
maybe
a band is getting back together for a show.
More than one.
Let's talk on it. Yeah.
Bane.
Okay. So, right. We knew, but we didn't say anything. I'm sure a lot of you knew. Yeah. I'm not gonna soft pedal this one.
Excuse me.
I say this as a fan of the band and consider them friends.
Yo, sometimes really quick, I think Tom coughs as a signal to the audience, like I don't agree with what Patrick's about to say.
I should have a towel to be.
It's like a coding. It's like a sorry.
Please fast forward from here.
So, I did not think this was going to sell out in 45 minutes.
No.
As a fan and a friend, I didn't think so either.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, 3,000 tickets. 3,000 tickets in like a half an hour, 30, whatever, 45 minutes. And then they added a second show at the same place.
All right. You know, Patrick's having a bad day, everybody.
It's true.
Can I add to it?
Yeah, please.
Please.
I think you have a good enough sense of humor that you'll find this funny.
Hit me.
But you can delete this if you don't find it funny.
Yeah.
So I get a text message from Justin Brannon.
Mm-hmm.
This week he goes, Drug Church came on the radio today. Or like Sirius, whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's 90, so he only listens to Sirius.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course.
And I go, yeah, he's great. He's like, I'm like, they're great, right? He's like, yeah, it's cool. He's like, that Nothing Works song was on? And I go, yeah. He goes, do you remember that documentary about Bellevue when the person just kept walking around like, the medications don't work, I don't want to be here anymore? He's like, that's what that song sounded like. And I was like, I'll be sure to tell Pat that you said he sounded like the person that was institutionalized about Bob, are you familiar with that?
No.
There's a documentary about Bellevue Hospital, like in the 90s, whatever. And this, like, yeah, very mentally ill person, like person with mental illness, is like walking around. It's like, I've been here for 4 years. Nothing works here. The medications don't work. Like, and it's like very monotone, like over and over, like on loop. They just keep you saying this over and over again. It's like really fucking sad.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But Justin compared the Nothing Works song to that.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. Man. I think your band's great.
Tell him he works for the Beast. He works for Babylon.
He works for the Beast. And he went to Silent Majority. And I turned to him. I go, yo, motherfucker, have you seen this band since August of 1998? He goes, nope. I go, did the last show of that tour in 1998, I was like, was that the last time you saw these guys? And he's like, yeah, absolutely.
And he was like, look, bro, none of them are in my district. Don't got to worry about them hands.
Exactly.
All right, yo, today we're doing a really special thing. We're going to talk about music. Guess what? We're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about vibes. We're going to talk about 2002. We're talking about Hellfest 2002. Were you both there?
I was there. I played.
Patrick, were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Hell yeah. Let me
be certain of this. This one was in Syracuse, is that right?
Yes.
It was the outdoor one.
Oh yeah, I was here.
The first outdoor one.
yeah, I was there.
All right. So I was not there. In 2002, I was living in New Brunswick. I had moved out of my parents' house in 2001 at 19. I worked at a screen printing shop. Shout out TDT. It was great. And I probably liked 5 to 10 bands. We'll count as we go on the show. But it was money I definitely didn't have and kind of far for me to go. And I was definitely I'm going to positive numbers, dude, anyways. But that's not to say that this was like a big, big show. So where were you guys at in 2002? Tom, where were you? You were. Oh, no. Shut the fuck up. Should you drop? He fucking dropped. We're keeping this all in. Patrick, where were you in 2002?
I think I was living in New York City at the time.
Yeah.
Probably at that stage, working for a company that was making documentary films for BET.
Pre-college, right?
Pre-college. Well, I've been to like 4 colleges, so whatever. But
So this is the adult pre-bard adult conversation. If you don't go to a college community or otherwise, and then stop going, I don't know if I trust your experience. You got to go, stop, go back, maybe overachieve in a community college setting at an age that's advanced, and then go back to university.
It's all necessary. It's part of the process.
Yes. Trust the process.
So, I was living in New York. I think working film adjacent, I was interviewing like Little Kim.
hell yeah.
The summer after he filmed the MPB video that got lost with Pierre.
There you go. That sounds right.
You were living in East Williamsburg, and was that the Dime Bank building? Was that you?
No, I did. I wish I lived there. That was a beautiful space. No, I did not. I lived across the street from a Spanish language video store in Williamsburg. By 2002, that's not true. By 2002, I was living on 805 Broadway. I've told the story. We were known as the White House because we the only whites in the neighborhood at that time. That was my life at that time. I was living in Bay Ridge at the time. I wasn't in Bay Ridge yet. Anyway,
so Tom, you go and you were. I was asking where you were, and you literally dropped out.
Yeah, because
where were you in 2002?
2002, I was touring full time. MPB was my full time job.
Mm. Hell yeah!
And we made enough money to. Yeah, I lived in Bay Ridge, in a brownstone.
Mm-hmm. What street? Do you remember the street?
Oh, of course. 71st Street between 3rd and Ridge.
My sister lives on 76th.
Yeah, it was between Ridge and 3rd. And my boy and my literal across the street neighbor that we talk shit all the time is Joe Affy from Maximum Penalty. So I'd like be like, I'd get up to like go get a bagel and I would just sit on a stoop for like 3 hours, being like, hardcore's fucking stupid, right? Like, and we just talk about fucking hardcore in 2002. So I lived in the first floor of a brownstone apartment with a roommate, and I, all told, I paid $275.
Yep.
Oh,
and my other God. Roommate paid $275. He made the dining room into his room. I moved. My brother-in-law lived there when he married my sister. They moved out and got a house together. He was like, "Oh, my brother-in-law will take the apartment," and it was this like 90-year-old lady who was just happy to have somebody that she could trust.
Yeah.
So we gave her more than we were going to, than she asked for. But I was like, I gotta give her fucking something. Like this poor old lady.
Jesus Christ.
And then she died. Oh. And then the guy who lived on the third floor was a family friend that knew me since I was born. Like quadrupled the rent. So now
this guy went from old family friend to this MF real quick.
Yeah, like it's on site, like still. Like if my brother-in-law or my sister sees fucking Terrence Casey out there, it's on.
Listen. Yo, okay, so we're teleporting everyone to a place. What were you going to say, PK?
I was going to say it is almost impossible, unless you're living the scummiest fucking life, for somebody in New York to imagine, because my rent was $300 as well. Yeah. So like it's just
and
impossible.
And Bay Ridge,
it's impossible
kind of nice.
To imagine.
Yeah.
I loved my spot in Bay Ridge. My spot in Bushwick, I love the experience. Very fun, but a total dump.
I will say this.
Ridge, Pat? Yeah. I'm sorry.
No go.
One off. Hold on. I'll find it right. 60 is 68th Bay Ridge Ave or no? It's the one right next to it. Hold on.
Okay. Yeah. Because 69th Street is Bay Ridge Avenue.
68th. So, 68th, everybody, this is not my racism on display. I assure you, this is just New York's racism on display. I lived at the where it becomes Arab, I guess. And
yeah, there's a place, part of Bay Ridge that's very, very Arab and like Muslim.
Yeah. And
kind of like mosques and whatnot.
The reason this sticks out is because some of the neighbors. Because do you remember the bagel spot that was right on that corner? Listen, all I'm suggesting is that I ran into some people that called it Little Beirut, and they weren't
it wasn't being uncharitable. It was just kind of like accepted.
Yeah. Let me. I'm trying to find.
Yeah, it wasn't cute. It wasn't like when they're like, "Oh, this is like Koreatown."
It's funny because I'm like
racist people.
I'm like, oh man, you guys were living in the city, and I was, but in New Brunswick, my rent was $200 a month. I had my own room, but it was a dude house. But and then I'm like, wait a second, the woman who I was dating lived on 31st between Park and Madison, and her rent for her bedroom, two bedroom, they live in a two bedroom apartment. Her half was $1,200.
That which seems like $1 million.
Seemed like $1 million. So it was a $2,400 apartment. That apartment now, probably 45. Quadruple that. Like, it had its own. It had like a living room and a little loft zone and two separate bedrooms with like their own doors and like, that's crazy. Money doesn't change, boys. So let's dive into Hellfest. What? This is a fun way to do this. I am going to be the everyman and ask you guys questions. Tom, was this part of a tour for you guys? Most Precious Blood played.
Yes, it was the beginning. Let me look at this. If this is the one. Yes, this is the beginning of a summer tour. It was The Promise, Most Precious Blood, and Throwdown.
Hell yeah.
Started here, ended at Precious Fest.
There we go. Patrick.
Yes.
Do you remember how you got to the show, who you went with? It was in Syracuse.
No, I have zero memory.
You can't remember who you went. You
not a
left
chance.
Left from New York City.
Yep.
Do you think you went to Albany first?
Yeah.
Do you think we directly? Okay, you went. Oh, okay.
There's a lot of Albany on here.
Oh, interesting.
And
there are.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Burning yeah, Bridges. I was gonna say. Oh, it's Burning Bridges on here.
Oh yeah,
Stage C on Saturday.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Okay, where do we start? So let me just tell you, for the uninitiated, we'll post this. Pat, try to post this on that Patreon post if you can. The image. Sure. All right.
This there is also are three a DVD stages this year.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No. That's right.
There's a big DVD of this.
Oh, yeah. People be loving this. Oh, my God. There's people who have been asking us for some shit like this. All right. Three stages. I don't know if it's possible to cover everything.
No.
You guys certainly couldn't have seen every single band who played. I'm going to run through names as we go. Stop me if you've got something to say.
Okay.
I'm going to start at stage C, Uphill Battle.
Friday? No idea.
Never even heard
no
that
idea.
Name. Yeah, Friday. Friday, stage C, Uphill Battle. No don't idea. Know. American Tragedy. I vaguely remember that name.
I remember the name, but that's just it's take one word from
small stage. Yeah, right. Yeah, like what if American Nightmare and Tragedy did something? Okay. Yeah. Third band to play on the first day at 12:40 on a Friday afternoon, As Hope Dies.
Yeah, okay. So
was a band.
Yeah, it was a band.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
I confuse them with If Hope Dies because they were both around the same time.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Oh, there's If Hope Dies on stage B on Saturday.
Okay, let's see this. Hope. Here's what I want to ask you guys. All right, who has more Spotify listens today? As Hope Dies or If Hope Dies?
I have no. I don't remember which is which.
I'm going to say All If. Right.
Tom, you're. Oh my God. Oh my God. All right. If Hope Dies.
What are you going to tell me?
All right. Guess the number for As Hope Dies.
3,500.
Okay. Patrick?
5,000.
10,000. 589.
Oof.
It only has their 2003 and 2007 records.
No, they're getting rough. Which is weird. Off.
But okay. Let's go. How about If Hope Dies?
10,000.
Okay.
14,
Tom?
14,000.
How about 934? What?
What?
Wow.
What?
And this has their it has their 02, 04, 06, and 2020 records.
That sounds wild.
Apparently so. Interesting. I would have thought way bigger numbers on that just because they're metalcore band names that I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Dead to Fall.
Big band from Chicago.
Yeah.
I've friended with a lot of those dudes.
Hell yeah.
They got bigger over the time.
Yeah, they did. I had a moment.
Yeah, this is early on for them.
Let's play this also. Tom, did you guys go to the fest for Friday?
Yes.
Okay, because you play Sunday. Bless your hearts for going to start a tour at a fest. Patrick, you were there for all 3 days?
Yeah, I'm sure I was.
Hell yeah. Look at you.
Oh, I love this stuff. Love by the way, Tom, it was 428. I did live on Bay Ridge Avenue. It was 428 Bay Ridge Avenue.
So you're right down the street from the movie theater.
So
and the mosque where everyone would like every douchebag from Bay Ridge was like, they were dancing outside the mosque at 9/11. That was the mosque. Like, they were not. No, they were not. It was proven to be false, but
facts not in evidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's between 4th and 5th is where that's at.
Yo, this is really, I'm looking at it on Google Maps. This is really nice.
Yo, I loved my life there. And
it's pretty funny because it's Bay Ridge Avenue. So there's Bay Ridge Avenue and Bay Ridge Parkway.
Yep.
Nobody actually calls it Bay Ridge Avenue. It's 69th Street or 75th Street.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
No one ever calls it by like Bay Ridge Parkway. No one goes
because it's all numbers there, right? Like everything
it's
is
all numbers. Those are the only two fucking streets with names on Senator Street.
Yeah, this is nice. Shout out to Bay Ridge. Okay. Monin.
I feel like they're an emo band. Might have had a moment later on. Have no idea.
Maybe Canadian. Did I make that up?
Maybe. Bury Your Dead.
Got way bigger after this.
Way bigger. Early for them.
Had a commercial on Headbangers Ball.
This one was big. Seven Angels, Seven Plagues, just for your 320 time slot.
Weren't big yet.
Yeah, I've tried a dozen times in my life. Maybe it'll hit someday. It's a type of melodic metalcore that doesn't make any sense to my ears. And
We are on Patreon. We are on Patreon with no sense of like dismissal to any of these bands. No tracks for you guys yet.
Nothing memorable, but I know a ton of people that love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really nice folks.
Some of these bands for sure have some big fans. So, all right. Long Since Forgotten, never even heard that name.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Code 7.
Oh, yeah.
This is when they went like a little bit more melodic and Big Dave wasn't in the band anymore.
Pat, do you like this band? Sounded like oh yeah.
No. They just had a moment. I like the material. What'd you say his name was? Big Dan?
Big Dave.
Big Dave Owen.
He booked all the shows in North Carolina.
I probably like that era more than the era that they were going into.
They went like a Deftones route after this.
Yeah.
Okay. A name I know and I've always liked but have never heard this band, Not Waving But Drowning.
Try
from St. Louis. It's a fucking Chia Terra song. Does not sound like Chia Terra.
No, it does not.
Yeah. How many monthly listeners for Code 7 on Spotify?
15,000.
7K.
1,700. And all the relevant records are definitely on here. Interesting. Breaking Pangea.
Philly band. Guy went on this year or the year after to join Taking Back Sunday for all the big records.
Interesting.
A guy named Fred.
Yep.
And just so, not a band I've heard, 433 monthly listeners on Spotify.
It's terrible. So it's not good. But when the main guitar player, singer, songwriter, John Nolan left Taking Back Sunday, this guy joined. And like the ones that you saw that like, but like you couldn't have avoided seeing their videos. This was the guy that was in the band.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Next one, Glass Eater.
Pop punk-ish from Miami. Hardcore, Jace.
Interesting. Okay. 2,100 monthly listeners.
Play with them a lot.
23. This Day Forward, Philly Suburbs, Legends.
Vadim. Yeah, huge.
Shout out to Vadim. Vadim has a solo record out that's pretty interesting.
It's excellent.
Is it good? I like
that. I bought the record and I listened to it. Everyone should listen on Spotify.
Shout out to Vadim. This record, by the way, the Transient Effect record, always stuck with me visually.
Yes.
Interesting.
I could picture the cover now.
Yeah, I can too.
Partially, no diss, but this was both a
is everyone still there?
Generation Records listening station record. And used bin record that generation for a long time. So shout out to them. And had fans. Good for them. Headline on that stage. All right. Stage B. Moving down the line. Endicott. 11 a.m.
Okay. So this was an Albany band. Really kind of an interesting moment because they were really big in Albany. Like an Albany thing.
Sorry.
Right?
No problem. Talking Endicott. Yep.
Albany thing. And they were interesting because they had all, in the same way that Bane mixes all these elements up, you know, you could say that you hear a vague Youth Crew. You could say that you hear a vague metalcore. You could say Bane is really a gumbo, right? Endicott was sort of that. But then they were this, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. They'd probably be honest about this. I think they took it to heart that their songs had no choruses. And then they put out a record, which was all choruses, and it was not it. You know what I mean?
Were they like With Honor at Jace?
No, they were like, I honestly think Bane is comparable in some ways.
I think you guys are both kind of pointing in a similar direction, though.
Same direction.
I mean, these songs, Endicott's songs went on long for my taste, but they kind of, I don't know. It was definitely its own thing until they signed with EVR and kind of were like on some, oh, we need choruses, and the chorus stuff didn't work. Some of these fellas have gone on to do other stuff. Hush, which is more like a Doom inspired. They do. Chuck from this band does. But
who's the singer of the band, right?
Yep. Everybody in this band, nice dudes, cool dudes. Myself and I think a lot of Albany people thought that they lost the plot with that last record. I mean, he used a lot of pink also.
Fella who played guitar in this band, Don, was he also a graphic design guy?
Yeah, that's right. 518 Prince.
Shout out to Don. Very good designer. Did a lot of stuff that you wouldn't know that he did in the mid-2000s. Lots of stuff. Bunch of half-hard stuff. Bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Shout out Don Naylor. Nice guy. How many of their, without being unkind, how many promo cuts on their EVR CD did you do?
yeah, I mean,
damn.
Yeah.
This is not an indication on the band. It's because of the time. This time frame, 2002 to 2005, people were still in the habit of pressing tens of thousands of CDs, and the game done changed, homie. So yeah,
that's right.
We did a lot of that at Rev HQ, where there were just pallets of CDs that were coming back at distributors saying, can't do anything with this. Hey, label, do you want these? Nope. Okay, how about we charge you to destroy them? Yup, go ahead, do that. Sure, fine. Can't do anything with them. It was wild, wild. So many thrown away discs. All right, the June Spirit.
No idea.
I feel like they were like a Jersey band that played like all like the skate and surfs like around this time. That's all I got.
All right, let's see if we can find anything. That name sounds familiar. I think you're right, Tom. Yep. 2001.
Like they were like, we're playing the Stingray stage at fucking blah, blah, blah. Like,
yep, you're not wrong. And that's about right. Yeah, interesting. 338 monthly listeners. Not bad. 20 years later.
From Marlton, New Jersey.
Yep. Oh, South
started
Jersey.
Started in 2003.
Yep, yep. So that's at some point we'll talk about how odd the South Jersey thing is. As I've noted, basically there's a huge population base that's just outside of Philly on the South Jersey side. Very livable, nice place. Whether it's Cherry Hill, Collingswood, Marlton, Maple Shade, Moorestown, all the way down to Berlin, Voorhees, really nice areas all around there. But it is Philly suburbs. And
right, towns that no one knows outside of New Jersey.
No, and like, yo, if you live, I didn't know those places until I ended up getting a job out there and lived out there for a few years, even though I lived 40 minutes away. It just was irrelevant to my world other than driving through to get to Philly. However, people from Philly probably would piss on South Jersey if it was on fire, despite the fact that they basically identify as Philadelphia adjacent. So,
sure.
Interesting place. Shout out to South Jersey. I got a lot of interesting, weird love for you. Building on Fire, anything?
Maybe
Syracuse band. I don't really know much.
Yeah. Syracuse, maybe kind of, maybe if I'm remembering correctly, in that initial records vein.
Oh,
that sounds right.
Okay. Love is Red.
There are 205 on a Syracuse bill.
Love is Red. We all know this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Love is Red, kind of melodic mosh. Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Yeah,
a little Hulud, little mm-hmm. Terror, little Reign Supreme, all in a – Reign Supreme wasn't around at the time, but that kind of idea.
Yep.
Like heavy, from the South, a had a moment. Like.
Yep.
Yep.
From Nashville and the surrounding parts of Alabama.
If you ran into folks from the Southeast in that like mid-2000s range, they wanted to tell you about Love is Red and talk to you about it. Very like like Stay Gold is to the Northwest, Love is Red was to the Southeast.
Right. And you know Jeff Yancey, right? From Richmond?
Yes.
Richmond. Wonderful guy. Loved him.
Really good guy.
Listener, but he played bass.
Shout out. And no Roger. Who was in
Roger from Singing Ships?
Yeah,
yep.
And Trial.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
shout out. Your Enemy's Friends.
No idea.
It's a MySpace band, I think. I don't know.
A Life Once Lost. Philly suburbs band.
Philly suburbs band.
Vadim started in that band.
The OG Bucks County, but they were kind of Doylestown, I believe.
Yeah, Doylestown.
Yep.
I believe one of these fellas is somehow involved in Siren Records, or was. I don't know. Quietly.
Weird, like metalcore.
Yep. Yep.
Vadim, who was in The Stay Forward, started in The Life Once Lost.
Interesting. Interesting.
Matt, did you ever fuck with The Life Once Lost? Because I feel like you like Burnt by the Sun.
Yeah, so A Life Once Lost.
I feel like this is like a Jace.
It is, but for whatever reason, it never really connected with me. I have been thinking about revisiting a lot of stuff from this era, so this will probably motivate me.
Mm. All right.
Season of Fire.
Our homeboy from Harvest,
yes,
Dave Walker.
That's Dave Walker. Doing really good work on this, honestly. So for people that maybe Harvest is too 90s for you, Season of Fire is really kind of just straightforward, heavy hardcore. It kind of rules. It's like,
it's good.
You could make the argument that it didn't fully arrive where it wanted to go. I guess you could say that, but it is properly good. Torture Inhibition is the name of the record. It's fucking, good. So, and visually, Bob, that one would probably, you've probably seen it at like, Generations, mm-hmm. But it's good record.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Interesting. Okay. Torture Inhibition.
Bob didn't think this was going to take that long then.
No, I knew it would take. No,
do everything.
I knew this was going to be where it was, and I'm excited about it. At the 3:40 slot on stage two, stage B, on a Friday, Between the Buried and Me.
I never got it. I like the stuff that these dudes have done in other bands. I just never understood this.
It makes zero sense to my ear. Yeah.
It's like prog rock with like death metal parts. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I see their six.
Huge.
Like, I don't know these fellas, so I can't be proud of them per se, but I'm very happy for their success. Seem like cool dudes. Don't understand the music at all.
Only 161,000 monthly listeners. So not
huge. Well,
yeah,
huge.
Still big. Yeah, Patty.
Mr. Drug Church over here. I do know this Season of Fire record cover.
Yeah.
Interesting. I kind of like it. Taken.
Okay.
Orange
County.
Harkins.
Ray.
Shout out to 100 Ray. Words or less. I saw him the other day at LDB. So Taken.
That was like 2 months ago, man.
Oh, sorry. Taken. Oh,
That's when you know you get old.
Yeah, that's
what I saw him the other day. Grandpa, that was Christmas.
So Taken is my preferred Poison the Well.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yep.
All right.
A band who I believe had a real moment locally in Orange County.
That's right. Yep.
In a scene that did that kind of led to stuff like Thrice, like this weird space between the Throwdown 18 Vision stuff and what Thrice would become. Taken's right in that space. What was the band after Taken? It was
Makoto.
Makoto. Yes. Thank you very much. Saw them a bunch because, knew Ray pretty well. Haste.
I don't know because, Tom, help me out.
Are you thinking of Haste the Day?
Well, this is where I get confused.
I'm all confused about these bands.
Yeah,
I never was.
Yeah. Maybe I don't know.
I feel like this is like melodic, kind of like Deftonesy, sort of like where all those bands went. Like Code 7 tried to do this, Taken tried to do this, but then like I feel like Circus Survive came around and like actually did it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you know, like a lot of fucking finger tapping with fucking someone singing Pretty over it.
I don't even know.
I apologize. It probably sounds like fucking Slayer. And
I love that description of Circus Survive though. I think it kind of hits. All right. In Pieces.
Good hardcore band from Connecticut.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Bane Ajace. by the name. You can tell.
Oh, yes. Okay. I now remember him. Okay.
Good band. Very good band.
This band, Open Hand. I remember their name, Open Hand.
Stop. All right. I hate this.
Do we want the T? Do you want the T from me?
Yeah, go. Yeah, we want the T.
So the singer kind of did his, like, this is pretty much a solo band.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. That he like would hire musicians around him. I think they were like, you couldn't tell anybody that this band wasn't going to be the next biggest thing.
Yeah, they were being pushed like, in front of everything.
Right. So like Trustkill like signed them as like, you know, like we're going to be slumming it with Trustkill until we sign to Epic kind of shit. And then it came out and it went over like a fucking fart in a phone booth. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing. This is like the T behind the T. So the guy in this band, very nice dude. The band is actually quite good. The record's very good, but like it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So the dude's name is Justin. The singer, he was a straight edge dude, played fucking emo music, you know, hired this band around him. His father was Wayne Isham.
What?
If you ever watched a music video in this time frame, or like from like 96 on, his father was the director of those music videos.
Yeah. Oh.
So this kid is a fucking multi-millionaire.
Yes.
But Justin Isham, his father was Wayne Isham. So it was like he was born like on third base in terms of like music.
Right.
Like access.
Just so everybody gets it.
Not in a bad way.
1985, Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue, Everybody's Crazy, Michael Bolton, Pretty in Pink, Psychedelic Furs in 86, Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi, You Give a Love a Bad Name, Bon Jovi. Wanted Dead or Alive, Bon Jovi, Girls, 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 Motley Crue, a grip of other Motley Crue, So Emotional, Whitney Houston, Heat of the Night, Bryan Adams, He's Touching, Pour Some Sugar on Me. He did the Pour Some Sugar on Me Def Leppard video. Oh, my that's pretty God.
But then it gets into like Janet Jackson. Like,
no, he's doing everything. He's doing Pink Floyd videos. He's doing, Black Cat. He did Black Cat, Janet Jackson. Does Enter Sandman, Metallica. Wow, wow, wow. Okay. Can we talk about Red Bamboo? How was it?
It was quite good. I hadn't been there in years. VP2 is gone, but it's something else, but I think it's still the same owners.
Okay, yeah, VP2 is gone. I don't know when it went, but it went, and it was like
now it's called Shanghai thing. something along those lines.
But you think it's still Shared Kitchen?
I'm almost positive. Because I don't know, Pat, I don't know if you remember, like when Ram Bamboo opened, it was like the new hot shit.
Yep.
So you could never get seated.
Yep. I recall all this. Yep.
So you used to be like, I'm going to go sit in VP2. You could order the Red Bamboo menu.
Yeah, VP2.
And sit in VP2 because VP2 had been there forever. Nobody wanted to be there. So you could literally get the same order, but just not be like, not wait 45 minutes for a table.
Right.
I don't know what the new place is called, but like, yeah, it was pretty good. The food was cool. Menu's a little bit different. They didn't change any of the decor.
No.
But yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I hadn't been there. It had to be probably coming up on 10 years and it was cool.
I have gotten, takeout wings from there a couple times. Amanda loves them. I think they're pretty good. I prefer those same wings, but they have the sugar cane stick.
Oh, inside.
As the bone, better than just the wood stick.
I think you can get those at. They changed the name of the place. Mm-hmm. It's up on like center, like right near Canal Street, but on Center Street.
Really?
That's where they get all their food.
Oh yeah. Oh no. The spot. Called, yeah. The grocery store, the market with all the vegetarian stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
It used to be called, like, I think it was, I don't know if it was like Feng Hua or something.
Yeah.
Not Feng Hua. It was something along those lines. And now it's like Lily's, whatever. Like,
yeah.
The other place is called Shanghai Villa, which is, and it's also a vegan small plate place. So it's got to be the same. And they'd run your food out the backyard and get you to the, but it was cool. The food was good. I had a breakfast sandwich and some wings. It was pretty all right.
Oh, yeah. All right. I like that. When's the last time you had vegan wings, Patrick?
I'm sure somewhat recently. This is not the most exciting content for our listeners, but I had absolutely delicious. I don't give a shit about pizza the way that some people do. I enjoy pizza, obviously, but I'm not, you know those dudes that are always talking about pizza. I'm not
sure,
among
sure, sure.
Yeah, Barstool.
I'm not among them, but that spot near Soundstage, that underground, ooh, they do a good vegan pizza, man.
Really?
Do a good vegan pizza. It was delicious. And I never, like I said, I don't care, but it was good.
Mm. Yeah, nice little Saturday in the good old Bodymore Murderland.
Yeah, I've been doing those like basically 22-hour fasts every day, but the show last night went so well that I said, you know what, I'll reward myself. I'll get a little treat.
How are the fasts doing? You're feeling it?
Completely fine. Like on a show day, it's so much better. Like I'm sure I would struggle at home, right? But like
right.
On a show day, it makes me feel light. I get poo out of my body in time to be on stage. It's cool.
Mm. What
out of my body?
What have you been eating in the 2 hours that aren't the 22 hours?
Holy shit. 2,000 calories in an hour.
You just basically. Go hard. You go hard? Oh, that's wild.
So I'll eat.
I mean, I carry pizza for him.
Yeah.
So I will eat like $20 worth of salad and I'll just go to the Whole Foods, buy a very, very big salad, and then also eat a half a pound of cookie dough.
Wow.
So, there's the Patrick we know and love. Good job.
That's how I've been doing it.
All right. Well, let's talk some hardcore. Let's do this. We talked on the main line. Let's do this. This will be our Patreon that follows up the main line episode. We'll put it up this week. We talked about the tracks. But we also said, and I don't, Patrick, you were kind of quiet during this part, so couldn't get your read. That there's a higher baseline of bands right now than there was before. Do you agree with that?
No.
Go in.
Are we talking in terms of like just quality?
We're talking about like the lower level, like lower level, the yeah quality. Like bands are better holistically. So recordings, live show.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, okay. I'll go with that.
I think so.
I'll go with it. But it depends on the moment. I've not made too many. I think I've been full throated about the eras that I haven't enjoyed. You know, there's one that's a little too recent for me to really go off on. You know, because I feel like
there's still some lingering people. What is that era? Just say it. Just say it. We're on Patreon.
I felt like the Mosher's Delight era or was just not good.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, like but that was coinciding. Well, like, so the Mosher's Delight thing, and Tom, correct me, Pat, correct me. That's like 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, maybe. But so it's coinciding with some of the like, Touche's popping, Trapped Under Ice is popping, Code Orange Kids is getting bigger. Like a lot of that stuff was coming up on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, you know, I would have to look at it. I thought it was kind of just dying down as we were starting the podcast. Is that track for you or no?
It was like it was on its very. You're not wrong. There was still Mosher's Delight stuff coming out, but it was like last legs kind of thing.
And look, everybody, I'm not. I don't know everybody involved with Mosher's Delight. I'm not trying to shit on everybody. I'm just saying that style, like that aesthetic plus kind of vibe. I thought
the demo core of that era. You didn't like?
Yeah,
that
I just thought it. What I thought it did was I thought it like kind of aggrandized a faux amateur approach to things. And if it was, so there was people that were like embracing what probably felt like roots hardcore to them, but it completely didn't acknowledge that a lot of the bands, and we've talked about this on the podcast, forgive me, a lot of the bands that we love from older eras were maxing themselves out financially to get the recordings that were the best that they could get at that time.
Well, so yeah, there's an aping of style in that production, but like there is also a feeling that it's like saying of that ilk. And I don't think this was wholly true, but I think there was some of this energy where it's like, yeah, we're just trying to be a New York hardcore band. And it's like, oh, like like Killing Time or like Outburst or Breakdown. Like, no, more like Fit of Anger or, you know, you know.
or Tommy Carroll's Irate that played one show and had a,
Like the Trip 6 7 inch, you know, like, there's a level where it's like, I have a lot of love for some of that, like, you know, with the straight edge stuff, we call it second rate, not so great. Second rate, still straight. Third rate, not so great. And some of that stuff's like charming and clever and silly and fun. New York hardcore, I think I have a lot of appreciation for some of the second, third tier stuff. But like, if you don't acknowledge that, like, the Breakdown demos are better than Fit of Anger. They just are. Killing Time is better than Fit of Anger. It just is.
And Fit of Anger would say that.
That's the thing that's lost sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, no, you're not wrong. It's an interesting thing. I think that there became a bit of a mask on energy with that stuff that in a weird way paralleled the same kind of energy that you dislike about, like, what do you call it? Secret guy hardcore, right?
Mysterious guy.
Secret guy hardcore is a new thing.
Yes.
Hey, come here.
That's the dude on the cover of the Killing Time record, actually. Secret guy hardcore. Mysterious guy hardcore, where there's almost this, like, we're in on it and you aren't. And there's a thing here. And it's like, well, really? An embrace of the amateurism, which is like, really?
You had to work hard to make it look like shit.
Right. And I don't feel that. I think there was some good stuff that came out of that, but then not so much. I mean, I think the Akulu folks all came out of that world, which is interesting. Mm. I think Countdown and some of the bands, the efforts they were doing before that, those guys were involved in, which is interesting.
I mean, yeah, there's like the Clear stuff that Pat likes.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, as I said,
Pat doesn't like Clear. He likes Free.
I do like Free.
But when he put out the Fury demo.
Here's the thing. I'm not shitting on all this uniform.
No. Just the vibe.
It's just, for me, and look, this is in some ways a touchy subject because I'm not trying to tell anybody what hardcore is, right? Like, really not. It's just, to my own tastes, I think that trying to be the best at what I do with very limited resources in terms of like my natural ability at the beginning of all my bands, really fucking no finances whatsoever, and trying to do the absolute best because it's a thing that I really care about. To me, that's part and parcel of the whole thing. Right. I don't mean to throw Masha's Delight into this next statement, but when there is a general vibe of what I did over my summer vacation hardcore, I'm out hard. You know what I mean? Like, but here's the thing, that is a huge strain of hardcore for its entire duration. So I'm not trying to tell somebody that they can't love that shit. There's people that find real beauty in the obscure stuff. There's people that it's to them, that is the culture. But I just fucking, it's nothing I ever connected with. I've been doing this for a long time. It's something I value. I take seriously. And sort of that, you know, 7-inch and breakup attitude. Get the fuck out of here with that.
I mean, I think the way you framed, yeah, please go ahead, Tom.
No, sorry. I'm not as familiar with Monsters of Light. I don't know where this was. Like, it was not in my purview whatsoever. Is this like Locking Out Junior?
No. You know what it was? It was, so Fury was a Monsters of Light thing, kind of, you know, like they did a live tape and maybe a demo, but it was basically trying to do late 80s for the most part, straightforward hardcore in the 2010s. So I think there was like a Stick Together live tape kind of thing.
There's a Power Trip one.
There's a Power Trip.
There's
a Turnstile.
There's Wild Side. Yep. Mil-Spec. You know what I mean? There's a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. Bob, do you like Monsters Delight stuff? Yeah, almost, like, assuredly. I like almost all of it. All right, let me go through this.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
The Big Contest 7-inch is good. The Time Will Tell 7-inch, that's really good. Unified Right has some songs. I don't know if it's on here. I love Fury, the band Shrapnel. That's actually pretty good. Free at Last, this tape is cool, but I really like the 12-inch that they did that came out on Triple B as far as this stuff goes. Burst of Rage is a funny one, a Connecticut band that had some weird stuff go down. But yeah, like Give did a tape. I think that's one of the live shows. Red Death demo, I believe. So it's folks, protesters, pretty good for the moment. Standoff Austin from Free and Have Heart Later Arrow. Was he in Standoff? No, he wasn't. Nick, who plays bass in Fiddlehead now, was in Standoff. Did a 7-inch on Youngblood. They fit in this space sort of between early Triple B and Youngblood.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, kind of did a lot of tapes and stuff like that. But yeah, you look at this Line of Sight is Austin's band. I actually really like Line of Sight. Praise did a tape. Step for Change tape's pretty good. Yeah, like you what you're pointing out here, Patrick, if there's people who like, I don't know, straight edge hardcore, late 80s stuff, classic Revelation stuff, but maybe you also like Schism records and are curious about the early new age stuff, and I'm trying to think, oh, what's the pre Jade Tree label, Action Packed? If you think Action Packed records are cool, go listen to most of the Monsters Delight stuff. You'll like it. But it's from this time. I remember there was a big
high
festival. High Impact, that's right. Action Packed was the release 7-inch. So those are the two sides, actually. High Impact and Action Packed, I believe.
You have no idea what it just took out of my brain to figure that out.
Good job. I appreciate that.
Go on.
So anyways, yeah. That was a weird time because you don't know. All right, it's Patreon, so let's unpack. I think this is the post big hardcore fest, post rivalry records, post rivalry records. I'm not trying to use that as an example. I'm using the hardcore, fastest hardcore has gotten too professional or glossy, yes, or clean. Bridge 9 is too glossy and clean.
Yep.
We need tapes, we need demos, we need raw hardcore, we need hand-drawn logos, da-da-da. Look, that's speaking to my heart in a lot of ways, except for the shooting down on things, which is to say, like, yo, when I started at Revelation in 2004, I didn't think we should start putting out demos or re-releasing, like, Warzone 7-inches or, like, I'll start hand drawing the cover or we'll, you know what I mean? I realized what Revelation was in 2004, 5, 6, as opposed to 87, 88, 89, et cetera. And so when there's an energy where it feels like you're trying to recreate something, it feels weird because why not just create something? Maybe even that is inspired by. And I think that's what people could argue against what you're saying, Pat, and say, no, we were trying to do something new and this and that.
Yeah,
and
which honestly, I mean, firstly, I'm looking at the discography, a lot of good bands. And secondly,
right.
And secondly, they're not wrong. Hardcore, particularly like the post-melodic hardcore, like okay, let's say that you just loved fucking dyed-in-the-wool hardcore. Right.
Yeah.
And Bridge 9 had, by that point, it's completely betrayed you. You know what I mean? Like, so even if you came up as a Bridge 9 kid, it was in an era where they lost you. Right.
Sure. No. Right. Because here's the thing. Like, yes, the post, and like, to be honest, like something like Have Heart starts as the What Counts EP.
Yep.
and so, then ends up at
songs
to Scream at Sun, which are two very different sonic, aesthetic, production value, overall vibe and energy items.
So, right. So let's say, and I'm talking without judgment. The music that was on Bridge Nine at that time, if I went back and listened to it, may or may not appeal to me more than Mosher's Delight. I don't fucking know. But
it moved in. Go ahead.
But it's decidedly different than what you signed on for. If you were kind of on the early end of that, right? And then let's look at what your options were in heavy music. Were you going to listen to the metalcore of 2014? Fucking no. You know what I mean? So where do you take it from there? Oh, I love music. I love heavy music. I love subculture heavy music. I love hardcore. What were your options? I'm sure if I looked, I could find a lot of good music that came out in 2014. But the fact of the matter is, I don't begrudge anybody for saying, hey, my aesthetic is hardcore. I'm going to put that out, or I'm going to listen to that. I don't begrudge that. Just for me, I just really did not like that. There was a moment that coincided with Mosher's Delight of just like, as you guys said, a type of crate digging that I thought was a little insincere, right?
Sure.
And a general like, maybe bordering on cosplay love of things that you kind of can never touch again, that you kind of can't recreate in any real way. So. You know, I mean, look.
No, I think it's interesting. It's hard to explain it. Tom, the band Lament.
Yes.
I know you're familiar, right?
Love Lament.
I think they're really cool. When I first discovered them, it was in a similar time. I discovered this band Gut Instinct from Baltimore.
Right? Yep, same label.
Yes, correct. Correct. Yes, correct. And Cornerstone Productions maybe did the, but whatever. Regardless,
they were something. They put out like Clutch, or like the early Clutch 7-inches. And,
they were in the same ether. If you like Breakdown, you would like Gut Instinct, but Breakdown's better. Like just full sale. Just is. I don't think the folks in Gut Instinct would be mad at that. Maybe there'd be somebody who's like, no, you don't understand. You had to see Gut Instinct at this one show. And I would love to hear that story, actually. But I remember the feeling of discovering them and be like, oh, my God. This isn't a band I had heard people talk about up to that point. I could use the Enough demo, New Jersey, straight edge, fast hardcore, kind of late 80s band, similar thing. Then you'd start unpacking these like legend pieces of it, these like little stories, these nuggets, and then it just becomes this cool shining diamond in the rough that you have an affinity for, partially because of the scarcity of it. Can I see how that can turn into I like this more than the thing that is objectively better? So I think what happens, though, is that cognitive dissonance between those two things being able to exist and it being okay and being able to say, look, like Breakdown's just the best version of this. I just happen to like this better, you know, like so like, you know, the Way It Is comp is better than the New Breed comp. Why? Listen to them back to front, back to back. You tell me which is better. That doesn't mean someone couldn't tell me, yeah, but I just like everything about the New Breed comp and how weird it is and how there's so many damn bands on it and how there is like, you know, there's like three or four songs that are just awesome. It's like, yeah, you're not wrong. It was a tape comp that came with a zine and, you know, these mystical like intangibles. So I think that sometimes that can come across or can convert into almost a theatrical version of the thing. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I still think people should hear the Lament 7-inch.
Soon, I'm not kidding. I would take the most incompetent VFW mosh over what I witnessed that night. It was fucking
It's rough,
terrible.
Man. It's really rough. It's sad.
And like, listen, who's the
drawing 50,000 people, so who gives a shit, but.
Who's the one fella in the band that's likable? Tom, who is that guy?
Duff.
Okay. So.
Because he was the dude that was in punk bands in the 80s.
Yes. And Bob, I don't know if you're aware of this. He's the only one of them. He must have gotten sober before the other guys. Must have. Because he's like. He's shredded. He looks healthy. He can still play. And from people who were backstage, he was the guy. He was the guy that would come up to you and want to talk to you about fucking Negative Approach or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
he's the one with the background.
He's the one that's also just like a chill bro. So, shout out to Duff. Slash could still play, but he looked fucking bad. it was just an all around pile of shit. It was really, really rough.
And people probably paid hundreds of dollars for that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was with my friend James, and after like maybe 40 minutes, he goes, "I don't know if I can do this." I said, yeah.
Well, dude, if this is any, so I'm looking at setlist.fm. So you saw them on November 18th, 2022. The week before they played in Singapore, they went on at 7:30 and played till 10:30.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. 29 songs.
He changed his outfit a dozen 28 times.
They did a Velvet Revolver cover, the Wings cover. Antidote with Attitude with by the Misfits with Duff on vocals. Bob Dylan, that's already there. But this show ends with an Aussie chant. But so they played for 3 hours, but none of it was good.
No, yeah, wow. And he was wearing a Aboriginal flag patch on his jeans, but it was upside down, and apparently it was not upside down at the next show. So whoever styled him got the memo. That hey, your efforts to be likable here are failing.
Oof, Duff. Do you guys know anyone in real life named Duff other than Duff McKaig?
I had a crush on Duff from MTV.
Oh yeah,
Karen Duffy. Right. Remember, she was so cute.
Duff's a good nickname. What are we going to talk about for hardcore? It's the Patreon. Shout out to everybody who follows us on Patreon. We love you. We appreciate you. We got you. Is there any stuff we haven't talked about on Maine because it's too hot for talk?
We could finally get to we could very briefly address the propaganda shirt conversation. If we could keep it to a pain-free few minutes and move on to another topic, I'd be happy to.
Let's go. What was refresh? Because it was on the internet more than a week ago, so nobody remembers what happened.
All right. So Jeff Rosenstock, who everybody tells me is a cool dude, but I don't know from Adam.
He wears shorts all the time and drives me nuts.
So I associate him with like Mikey. I assume he's Mikey Erg's dad. Is that true or untrue?
They're probably about the same age, but
yeah, let's say he's his dad, his cool uncle.
Okay. His biological uncle.
Right. He was in Bomb the Music Industry and something else.
Oh, bummer. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So
like
everybody,
he was a ska dude.
I like that stuff. And also everybody, I don't, before this gets back to Mikey Erg, I don't know a Mikey Erg song from a fucking The Sound of a Golden Retriever Barking. I have no fucking idea. It was just one of those kind of
The Sound of a Golden Retriever Barking, the new Mikey Erg's album. Let's go.
I'm just saying, both of you will be very aware of this world, although I don't know how much time you spent there. Certainly Self-Defense played that New Brunswick basement scene an awful fucking lot.
And went to a lot of them. It evolved. By the time it hit, yeah. See, you know what? You probably had to swim in some of the same soups as some of that stuff that became the Erg's world.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. for sure. Mm. And look, everybody, just because of that music doesn't make any fucking sense to me. It doesn't mean I don't wish these people bad luck.
You're God not a hater.
All. No, God yeah. bless all. I hope Mikey Erg is a trillionaire off of Erg music. So
he plays a lot. He does pretty well. He was
What was that venue in Latham? The landing spot? I saw him there.
Landing zone.
Shout out.
Was that Club 797? Or was that something different?
No, something different. Landing zone was on Albany Shaker Road, I think, like out by the airport.
Right there with Death by Stereo.
Really? That's cool.
I'm like 99% sure.
It was a nightmare of a venue. So this Jeff Rosenstock, Mikey Erg's uncle, says he's coming down on the merch cuts that these venues have. And we've discussed it on this podcast. Mm-hmm. They are borderline criminal. And particularly when you reach a certain level, but not the level past it, it is deeply frustrating, because when you're a band on what I kept hearing from our friends in DIY music was, so real quick, everybody, basically, if you're really out of the loop on this, venues will ask for a percentage of your sales in merch every night, right? Okay, so
I looked up the Landing Zone Latham concerts on setlist.fm. The only set list they have, I wish I was kidding, is the Ergs.
Whoa!
Uncle Jeff took care of him, made sure it got up there.
October 8th, 2008, they played first song side one, A Very Pretty Song for a Very Special Lady, part two, Hey Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms, It's Like I Say You Know, and Bike It.
Hold on. Pat, keep talking, but Tom, give me that date one more time.
10-8-08.
Okay, I was watching a preseason Knicks game in the bar area while they played.
Incredible.
It was good David Lee era Knicks. real rough times. But I'm trying to find it right now. Let's see. 2008. Yeah. Oh, yeah. D'Antoni's first season. Yeah, it was an early preseason game. I'm trying to find it right now. All right. What were we talking about? We're talking about Uncle Jeff.
Okay. So
right. So he put out a spreadsheet of all the percentages of each venue he was playing.
And they're fucking onerous. There's no debate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, he's also playing places like fucking Terminal 5 that fits 3,500 people.
Right.
So, to connect this dude's taking gel out on tour with this tour. I'm pretty sure it's for that tour. Yes.
And by all accounts is a cool dude that actually likes music.
Yep.
Yeah, shout out to that dude.
So he's putting sort of the entire system on blast. He seems like a reasonable adult. You know what I mean? So he's just venting, hey, this is one of the irritations I have in life. Look at it. Sucks. And there's a bunch of outcry. Metalcore bands had been doing this for a while, but people just dismiss metalcore bands. So like nobody gave a fuck when metalcore bands were like, yeah, we're getting robbed here. And everybody's like, shut up, man.
Go play another mosh part.
Yeah. So, but when Jeff Rosenstock, who's very well liked, comes out and says this, a different class of people took to heart. So they said, okay, they started the conversation. It went in every fucking direction because there's always the pedantic, potentially autistic dude like Patrick who has to point out like the, well, you know, you can negotiate these things, and then which is not helpful in the moment, but then also the sloganeering of, you know, this is why you should only play DIY shows. That's not helpful either, because heads up, everybody, your DIY venue cannot get any type of licensing to play for me to support 3,500 people. I'm sorry. I wish it was not the case. I would love to play your burnt down fucking dirt mall. You know what I mean?
You really want to play my.
That's the other band. That's Drug Charge and Dirt Mall.
That you have the keys to because your uncle is the janitor. I would love to play it. However, we'll only get two songs in and then I'll have a bunch of angry people because the shit gets shut down. So, anyway, when you get to a certain size, being properly DIY becomes very, very difficult. And if you need fucking proof of that, a band who only plays irregular venues, like non-venue venues. I know their booking agent of many years, or was, and that shit is a fucking hassle in every meaningful way too. You know what I mean?
You don't, Pearl Jam, right?
So listen, Pearl Jam. It is all this shit. This Rosenstock guy puts it out there. People talk about it. Propagandi gets on Twitter and subtweets and just says, what was it? Like, people really people engaged. People
complaining about merch cuts, but using sweatshop labor for their merch or something like that.
Yeah, so to that effect, right. And people got very, very, very mad. And I would love to talk about why anybody on earth feels judged by a fucking Canadian. Who gives a goddamn what Propagandi says? Now, even if you love Propagandi, and I really like two of the records, even if you love Propagandi, who cares? Fucking
well, because I feel like people were just like, all right, what is it? Are we gonna like one up everybody forever? Like,
well,
it was hard eye rolling. Yeah,
it was corny as fuck. It's like, dude, like, of all, you know what I mean? Like, but I think Propagandi has always kind of been like this virtuous band in a sea of, you know, shitty people.
Yeah.
So like when they say it, it has a little bit more weight than like if like some rando said it.
But
to the same point, it was kind of like, really, dude, you're going to fucking argue, like, oh, you're mad that they're taking a percentage, but like you didn't look how you sourced your shirts. And then the guy had to come back and be like, well, actually, we use this kind of like all this, like they sourced it from an appropriate place, according to Propagandi. It was like, what the fuck?
I would have replied with a quote tweet that just said, thank you, Propagandi. Because who gives a fuck? Like
Scott sucks.
Propaganda has entered the chat. Yeah,
right. You. So I didn't have any problem with it because this is what Propagandi does. Propagandi is the holier than thou. I've got, you know, like you're not examining yourself enough. And up until this point, in my opinion, they have done it really well. They've done. They've been the conscience of that little scene. And I feel like they've done it in a somewhat obnoxious, but also somewhat self-aware way. And I've got no problem with Propagandi. And I had no problem with this thing that they said. Also, because frankly, well, I did not find it helpful at all. Yeah. that type of thing is interesting. It is interesting to say a true thing that nobody wants to hear. Now, again, nobody wants to fucking hear it. But I'm never mad at that, right? Like, I think there's a place for that, and we need to take it a little less seriously. But my big problem, and listen, Tom's right, it was not helpful, and it was a total like, all right. But
very, very, very Sam McFeeters of,
yeah, it was, and
very
it's
born very, against it, the kind of,
yeah, oh,
but here's the deal, it's a very well actually. And you know I'm Mr. Well Actually. That is me. It's so I'm
fine. Shit. Yeah.
I'm fine with it. But people did not like it. And here's the deal. The people that were like, I'm so disappointed. Why are you disappointed in a Canadian? He probably owns like a landscaping business and tours fucking 30 days out of the year, maybe in Europe. And this is a fella. I just can't understand why we feel judged by each other, right? Like, that man is my fucking peer. I don't give a fuck what he says about anything.
I mean, do people feel judged by him though?
That's what was going on. And there was people trying to justify themselves to Mr. Propaganda. I forget his name, Chris, maybe whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah, he's called Mr. Propaganda. So Uncle Jeff felt a way about it, I think. And,
well, Uncle Jeff,
Gandhi was
Uncle Jeff carried himself with.
He did
with,
well.
Yeah, he yeah, with class. Because
he was like, "Yo, dude, it's me," and they were like, "Oh shit, that's right. Sorry, my bad." Like,
yeah, that made it even like, "Oh god, dude, what are you doing?"
So, I don't know. I just, to me, the bigger issue. We could talk about any part of it you want, but to me, the bigger issue is, guys, music is a huge part of my life, not just in the like. It's shaped my feelings on things. It's like, it's also a big part of what I do all the time. And I have people that I love and respect in music. Like I think that they're, what they do is great and I admire them. I couldn't give a goddamn what any of them say about the way I live my life or the way that I live, the way that I get a, what Bob, you could tell me a $2 better margin on the thing that I need to, on the thing that I need to sell to be able to fucking make rent. It's like, hey man, I don't engage in that no ethical consumption under capitalism bullshit because it is a natural fact that if you wanted to live in the woods, you could. So I'm available to any and all criticisms regarding how we should conduct ourselves. Nothing is out of bounds for me. If somebody wanted to say you should throw your phone in a lake, I would say probably should. I should probably also never get in a fucking commercial jet plane, which uses more fucking fossil fuels than anybody could ever comprehend.